And welcome to the Crypto Explorer. It's a podcast by Sygnum Bank, designed to bring you closer to the world of crypto and to the future of finance. I'm your host, Alia Dasgupta, and today I'm joined in our studio by Mike Taormina, who started out at JP Morgan, spent some time in fintech, and today leads institutional business at Index Cooperative, and Stefan Edelman, who had his background with UBS and BlackRock, and now leads business development for the asset management team here at Sygnum. So how did these institutional guys get into the crypto world? And how can one really think about investing in crypto? Hopefully, those are some of the topics we'll cover today. But before we really dive into it, I would maybe want to start with some introductions. Mike, do you want to go first?
Sure. So, you know, as you hit, I started off in traditional asset management. I spent a decade in fintech as a co-founder in the online lending space. But then about a year ago, a little over a year ago, I saw a presentation on DeFi and NFTs from a VC here where I'm based in New York City. And by the end of the presentation, I was convinced I had to be in this space and took it upon myself to research on a website called DeFi Pulse, which is an analytics page listing all of the top DeFi protocols by how much they're used in dollar terms. And so just going down the list one by one, trying to understand what made each of them different and special. And that led me to a product that I could purchase, advertise on their site, that gave exposure with one token to about 12 of these large DeFi protocols. And that led me ultimately to the community that was behind it. And that's the Index Cooperative. And before I knew it, I was running institutional business for the organization.
That must have been a heck of a presentation. Can you tell us where it was and who was doing it?
It was Sean Lipple over at FinTech Collective, and he runs their DeFi fund.
Very influential.
Yes.
Stefan, what about you? How did you end up here?
Thanks all for having me. I spent most of my career so far in traditional finance, mostly in distribution or sales roles, as you mentioned. And then a bit more than a year ago, I had a catch up with a former client who is now my boss, who's heading the asset management team here at Sygnum. And he told me about this role, and I was, what is this all about? So I started to understand that this is going to be huge and that there are many opportunities, and foremost also a lot of fun, I think, an opportunity to work with a lot of interesting and very talented people. So I got deeper and deeper into the topic, learning every day, and now I'm on that journey together with our clients and find new solutions how we could invest in crypto.
Cool. Awesome. No, thanks both of you for being here. It's really exciting to have this conversation, because I think whenever anyone starts out in crypto, the first sort of concern is that it's just a lot of information. It's really hard to kind of absorb all of the new things that are happening in the market. And arguably, both of you guys are also still, I would say, relatively fresh into the space. And I imagine you also face the same challenges in a way. So we look at the market, we see the different sorts of market movements, but how would you really talk about the different opportunities for investors here? Maybe Mike, take the first one.
Sure. And I'll say that because there's so much information, it's impossible to get around all of it. And so just like with anything, I think there's a push to specialize if you can. And I think that's actually what makes the Index Cooperative products really interesting, because you don't have to know who's going to be the winner. You're really like buying into a story, right? So this idea of indexing in crypto is relatively new, but you're starting to see that more and more. You're seeing it at Sygnum as well. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about the opportunities in the DeFi space, or for someone who's new and is interested in like those opportunities, I would still be looking to the top protocols, the biggest ones, and trying to understand why they're interesting, but also taking some funds and using it really as an investment in education more so than a financial investment. That's how I looked at it in the beginning. So I went on to an Aave protocol, for example, which is a borrowing lending protocol, and just understood. I mean, they're more attractive yields than I could get at my local bank. But I was able to provide funds, stable coins in this case, and earn a nice yield, and understand how this space is taking out the intermediaries and providing value to both ends of the equation. Other opportunities, I think, you know, you look at, again, looking at the top protocols, Aave and SushiSwap, for example, are multi-chain, right? So their focus is to not be on a singular blockchain, but to be across the entire DeFi ecosystem. Compound is another borrowing and lending protocol. And what they're trying to do is abstract away for large institutions the intricacies that go into being on chain on your own. And they're offering this yield kind of through what they call compound treasury. And it's really growing in size. And then I think the other protocol to be mindful of, if you're new to the space, to dig into is, of course, Uniswap. So they pioneered the automated market making model, and their V3, their third version, is extremely unique in offering very concentrated liquidity. So real quick, just taking a step back, what does that mean? An automated market maker doesn't have like Coinbase and Gemini, an institution that is running an order book. Rather, it is users providing liquidity into pools. And then if someone else comes to this site and wants to trade something that they have for something else, they interact with these pools and the trading fee goes to the original providers of the tokens. And Uniswap has found a way to make this really efficient. So off the top of my head, those are just some of the biggest protocols in DeFi that if I was new to the space, that's where I would start.
I had the same feeling as Mike, that first you need to understand that you can't know everything. And during my journey, I really try to build a bit of a framework when it comes, okay, what are the parts of the overall crypto market? What are the opportunities when I look at the protocol layer, when I look at the application layer? And specifically, as Mike mentioned, in the DeFi space, a bit more general, I think it, when I look at it, what it offers to investors when it comes to yield, as mentioned, but also the growth opportunities, when I look at how also regulation, after all, will help to grow this whole part of the market, when I think how institutional investors kind of can start to participate also in a regulated or also on-chain a version of investment opportunities that are out there, I think it's just great. And I mean, if I kind of look a bit forward with this regulatory clarity that we think will come, the institutional adoption will come, and also as Mike mentioned, with a few examples, I think the innovation, and we've all been in traditional finance, they all are talking a lot about innovation, but very little is actually happening. And I think looking at all those different DeFi protocols and projects that are out there in a very broad range of topics, I think this will actually bring innovation to the financial services as a whole. And I think it will also bring traditional finance forward in a sense of that they realize, okay, there are things that are easier, simpler, possible in a decentralized way, and after all, for clients and users, even in a cheaper way. So yeah. I think the options and the possibilities that we have are just huge.
No, it's true. I mean, this is one way to really see financial services get the overhaul that it's needed for the last 200 years, really. But and when we're speaking of innovation, I think that there's perhaps different sorts or different avenues, let's say, of innovation that we see kind of building out in the blockchain space. Maybe we can talk a little bit to those and how you would sort of define different sectors and what each of these might contain. Stefan, go.
I can start. I mean, first of all, it's important to really stay quite basic and really think of, first of all, this protocol layer where you see a huge growth in of applications that are built on the scalability and interoperability solutions that are or have been coming up. See a strong growth and will also help mass adoption. I think the protocol layer is a super important sector because that's kind of the infrastructure for everything. Other sectors, obviously Web3 as a whole, where we're building a whole new infrastructure in a decentralized and kind of user-controlled version of the internet. Gaming that is exploding. Metaverse, where you see massive inflows in from venture capital as well. The whole NFT space, where new use cases I think are coming up every day. And then obviously there are kind of new sectors also coming up. Let's think of for example e-commerce, where a lot of opportunities lie, I believe. But I think first of all, it's really it helped me at least to think of those building blocks. Okay, what kind of topics, what kind of actual businesses are replicated in a hopefully better, but for sure decentralized way.
Sure.
I mean, I think Stefan covered a lot of the themes that we're seeing. And it just speaks to how this entire ecosystem is exploding in innovation. It's really hard to keep up. So, you know, I talked earlier about being a specialist in the space. So we have an entire team over at Index Cooperative that's looking at the metaverse. I don't know what's going on over there. I just know that we have a product that speaks to that theme. And that's one of the benefits, I think, of this entire indexing theme, is that you don't have to be an expert in everything, because you can't be an expert in everything. And so that's how many folks can go about it. I tend to focus mostly on DeFi. But when I think of, the only other theme I think to add is perhaps layer two scaling solutions. So, you know, to build on Stefan's point with the protocol layer, you have layer one blockchains, which are the base layer. That's the Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, Avalanche, etc. And then you also have scaling solutions, which predominantly are on Ethereum, but you're seeing it on some other chains as well. And they help increase throughput, right? Allow for more transactions at a cheaper cost. And that is a trend that is still in the early innings, and I think is one to watch, you know, over the next couple of years.
Right. I mean, so first of all, I guess the first challenge would be kind of defining a sector. So let's say DeFi as a sector or layer one as a specific sector. But how to even go about kind of, let's take layer one protocols, right? When you want to build the sector out, what sort of indicators do you guys think about when considering who fits inside an index representing the sector versus somebody who doesn't make the cut? For example, and instead of layer one, let's talk more about the DeFi index, because I think that's what both of us, all three of us, are working more on now. So let's talk about that one.
Yeah. So for the Index Cooperative, our DeFi, we have two DeFi products. One is the DeFi Pulse Index, and those are some of the larger protocols. And then we have another product called the Bankless DeFi Innovation Index, GMI, and those are kind of smaller cap
What's
DeFi
GMI?
Names. GMI as in gonna make it. Yeah. and the idea is, this is kind of like the minor leagues, I suppose, where one day they can graduate into the DeFi Pulse Index. And the rules to get into the DeFi Pulse Index are just more stringent. So the way that this product works, and this is consistent with most of our thematic products, we have a third party that is a methodologist, and they put together the rules for what's going to go in or out of an index. And so DeFi Pulse, also known as Scalara now, is the methodologist for that flagship product, and they've put together the rules. And some are qualitative, some are quantitative. So we look at things like market cap. How long has the token been in the ecosystem? It needs to have been around for at least 6 months, both the token and the protocol, because we want some degree of battle testing. Has it been audited? If there were any issues, how have they responded to that? Mm-hmm. And so each month, those rules are run against the entire DeFi Pulse ecosystem that website tracks. And
sure.
Some tokens are added and some are subtracted out. And right now, there are 14 in it, but there's also rules like concentration limits. So these are a lot of the same concepts that you'd find mm-hmm. in traditional finance that we're just bringing yeah. over and applying to crypto.
And Stefan, you also have worked with now creating these sorts of indexes. And what are the sort of indicators you're looking at?
I mean, I would say, in one sense, very similar. I think what I would like to add is how we also distinguish it a little bit is kind of the pure index where we are building. Now we started with the DeFi index, and we're now looking into very similar as what Mike and team is doing, kind of to broaden that set of sectors when it comes to gaming, metaverse, et cetera, et cetera. And mm-hmm. I think there it what we found is that there is obviously a lot of data out there, but it's the quality of the data is not always very, very useful. So I think you really need the specialists, as Mike mentioned. You need to have those guys who actually understand the methodology, understand the data, really go through it, clean it. And where we differentiate a little bit is kind of we think of sectors where we mainly, or first of all, you need to define, as Mike said, you need to understand, okay, what token is in what sector. If they are doing different things, should you split it between different sectors, which is one or option. And you can see that it's part is quantitative and part is also always a bit qualitative sure. judgment, okay, where to put what a token in what sector. For us, when it comes to then investable products, because market cap usually helps to build a sector, it gives you a good indication and good overview of how the sector looks like, which is already helpful, I think. But when it comes to investable products, I think, or we think that market cap is not enough. You want to have kind of the relevant token. And there we kind of similar look at different data points. We also look at next to market cap. We look at what we call it the financial market adoption, kind of traded volume is an indicator. We look there. Then obviously a bit more on the qualitative side, but also with quantitative data behind how strong is the network? How strong is the ecosystem growth that we can see? And then the fourth part we look at is the whole technology part, obviously, for protocol layer, how much are those protocols developed? How much can be built out of that? When it comes to DeFi, more specifically, there you want to look at what is the tech risk, where we look at a risk score of the smart contracts, as we believe that's the largest part. But it's a lot of work behind, and it's not as in traditional finance where you have all the data and it's always the same data and you can just click and then you have your subset. And one thing I would mention specifically also for DeFi, I think now DeFi is one sector, but as it is the largest sector right now, I think we will also see a more specification when perhaps DEXs are decentralized exchanges are a subsector at one point, mm-hmm. lending platforms, etc., etc. But that I think will come with growth and maturity of the whole sector.
That's super interesting. I mean, and also you talked a little bit about like the quantitative part. Of course, these are like, you know, rules based on exactly what the numbers kind of say, but also that there is kind of a qualitative aspect to this. And so then, of course, I have to ask about, you know, actively managed versus passively managed indexes. And I don't know how you feel about these, Mike.
Well, I mean, from a qualitative standpoint, you know, when I think about the DeFi Pulse Index screener, for example, it's stuff like, is it considered a security in any jurisdiction? And if it is, by the way, then it wouldn't be included. So it's aimed sure. to be as rote as possible from a rule-based standpoint, where, you know, we don't want elements of subjectivity finding their way into the selection process. So each month, DeFi Pulse or Scalara will blindly follow those rules, including some which are descriptive, but it's more, you know, like in the case of the security question, it's more of a binary one.
Yeah.
I think in general, the active versus passive decision is very subjective. It depends on how do you see the market, what is your investment goal. So we do run both, but I think what is super important, what Mike also mentioned, if it's passive, it has to be passive, because you see a lot of products also out there that, yes, it's kind of rules based, but then it's also a bit of gut feeling coming into where I like Solana a little bit more or SushiSwap and let's increase that allocation. That, for us at least, is never a passive product. It's rules based. It's a clear methodology. You know exactly what is coming out. It's quantitative based. And I think only then it's a real passive product. And then it's also not about outperformance or underperformance. Yeah. It's you want to track a sector or a theme as accurately as possible. And then you find your methodology where you think that gives me the relevant tokens in that sector. And then, it follows the methodology. And then it's a real passive instrument, I would say.
And I would just add some of the things that make this space just different, or how I would, you know, suggest anyone new to it would view it. These are effectively early stage startups in many cases, right? We're very early in this ecosystem. So I would look at some of the layer one blockchains like Bitcoin and Ethereum and Solana a bit differently, right? They're more established. There's more data, but still there's not too much data on this space. We're still in the early innings. So that's one thing just to consider. I look at the more like long dated call options. And then two of the metrics, you know, Stefan hit on one of them that find our way into our methodology that you'd see probably less of in the traditional finance markets would be this concept of total value locked. So that's the dollar equivalent of funds being used in a given protocol. So if, for example, with Aave, how much is being lent out in Uniswap? How much is being provided in liquidity by various users to that protocol? That's kind of a new concept, novel concept. And then the other consideration is liquidity, right? So you have to purchase some of these tokens on chain, you know, in order to put them in the index. And because they're relatively nascent or at different stages of their evolution, some are more liquid than others. And that is extremely important for some of the newer themes, like our Metaverse Index has that as a key component to determine the relative weighting of one token to the next.
I couldn't agree more. And I think what is super important, and that's a bit that step that I mentioned before, from a pure sector to investable product, is that you, depending on the sector, you need to look at different data, as Mike just told us. That's super, super important that you find the right metrics for your methodology within one sector, because they are completely different drivers. When we look at protocol layer, DeFi, Metaverse, completely different drivers behind. And then I think the really kind of the quality that the asset manager can bring is the knowledge that you look at the right things and you look at the right data. And that's where it gets complicated when you also think of, okay, yeah, I can build my own portfolio. I select some DeFi tokens and it will be fine. I hope we can all together show that it's not that easy to build such a portfolio, or you can do it a bit more sophisticated or a bit less sophisticated.
Sure. I mean, you just mentioned another term, right? Having it on-chain versus off-chain as an index. And what does that entail for me as an investor? Like, why does this matter to me?
Sure. Okay. So when most users come into the crypto ecosystem to purchase tokens, the vast majority are doing so on a regulated exchange, like a Coinbase. Or a Gemini.
Yep.
In order to do something, quote unquote, on-chain, that means sending funds either directly from your bank to an Ethereum or Solana wallet, for example, or sending it from a centralized exchange. So this is what I personally did, was send it from Coinbase onto what's known as a self-custodial wallet. So this is in my case, this is an Ethereum wallet that I control. Mm-hmm. And with that wallet, I'm able to go to one of these DeFi protocols. I access that on, you know, a web browser. I'm able to connect my wallet near instantaneously, and I'm able to interact with that protocol directly. I don't have to fill out any account opening documents. I'm able to go onto one of these exchanges, like I mentioned, Uniswap, SushiSwap, as a couple examples, and purchase one of these tokens on that exchange, or lend money to Aave directly through the protocol. All of that activity is considered to be on-chain. And when we think about index products, they live both off-chain and on-chain. So when we would think about off-chain, I would include centralized exchanges. There are limited partnership funds. There's the ETP. There's ETFs in some cases, usually futures-based. There's trusts when we think about Grayscale, right? So there's different types of vehicles. Those would be in the off-chain bucket. On-chain, that would be where a project like the Index Cooperative fits in. So We use a protocol called SET, and that takes the Ethereum standard tokens and wraps them into a single token. So when you own a single DPI token, it's backed by 14 subcomponents, and you purchase it on chain. I'll add, though, the lines are starting to blur because we recently got DPI listed on Gemini. So you no longer have to go on chain in order to access the products, but that is the typical use case.
And Stefan, what do you think is like the pros and cons, or what are things to consider with on and off chain solutions?
I think there are no pros and cons as such. I think it really depends on the investor behind, right? I mean, then on the other hand, with the clients I speak are still in traditional finance, kind of the banks, the independent asset managers, family office, etc. So they do look or do want to invest in the crypto space, but perhaps they just can't or do not want to go on chain in that sense. So they need a bankable product that they can book into their client's account that they perhaps can buy over a traditional exchange. So I think that's then when an off-chain solution like ours can add value, but more for traditional investors who are dipping their toes into crypto and want to have it on their traditional bank statement, I think then it makes sense. But there's a different type of investment for different investors or different access. And as Mike said, it's, yeah, for some it's easier on chain and for some it's easier off chain, but there's no right or wrong in my view in that sense. And it really depends on what you want to achieve. And I think the most important point is that it's high quality behind and you don't buy, excuse my French, any crap that is out there.
Okay, no, that makes
sense. I have some thoughts on this too. Like, I actually do think there are a bunch of pros and cons. Like, for example, we talked about liquidity before. If you're putting together a layer one basket today, I think it's a lot easier to do it off-chain. And so you see a little bit more of those products, whereas if I think about trying to do so today at Index Cooperative, it's more difficult because everything needs to be an ERC-20 token today. So we need to bridge something over a non-Ethereum token into the Ethereum ecosystem. I think if you're doing so in an off-chain vehicle, you can pick up these various tokens and hold them at a custodian with more ease. I'd also say I guess the seventh point, it's more familiar, right? So these are the types of vehicles that end users have been purchasing for a long time. They're regulated. The rules are known, right? Yeah. And then I think there are also some advantages to a purely on-chain product. It trades 24/7, which also means you can get immediate liquidity. So if something happens in Russia, for example, over the weekend, and you wanted to get out of a product that's on chain, that's very easy, or one that's now listed on a centralized exchange. That's very easy because it's 24/7. Another interesting thing is that you can redeem the token for the underlying component. So DPI is effectively a cost-effective way to hold a bunch of tokens. If you ever wanted to redeem, you could do so. Imagine being able to take an SPY share and redeem it at any time, 24/7, for 500 underlying components. I think that might be overwhelming for the S&P, but it's a concept that just doesn't exist, that exists in DeFi. And I think where you fall on this, and Stefan is alluding to this, is personal preference, right? So an on-chain product is self-custodied. And for a lot of people, that might not be a comfortable proposition for them. For others, this is amazing. So it really is a case-by-case situation.
That's super interesting. And it's nice to understand that, like, fundamentally for the end investor, perhaps there isn't that much of a difference. However, when it comes to maybe the custody solution for the thing or access or maybe the desire to maybe self-manage to some extent, then that's where these solutions kind of have their benefits and pros and cons, let's say.
For sure.
But, and I think one Also, one topic to mention is kind of value for money, right? I think one product group that hopefully will disappear are like single coin trackers, ETPs.
I'm
sorry, but that's, I think, then you buy a token. I think if you buy a diversified product, then you want to have the skill of the asset manager, and then you trust them, and then you do your selection, and then it comes to the preference. How do I want to invest? How do I want to custodize? How do I want to be behind a regulated bank? For some, it's a very good reason to be invested. For some, it's an absolute no-go. So I think it's, going back to, it's really value for money that is important. And then it comes to your preferences, how you want to invest.
On that topic of single name funds, it just so happens, I was just looking at this, so I have some data at my fingertips. So in traditional markets, if we look at equity markets, globally, equity markets are roughly 123 trillion. And of that, 15 trillion is in the passive investment management space. So index funds and ETFs, that's roughly 12%. If we looked at the crypto market, it was around 2 trillion, 12% would be 240 billion. In reality, it's today around 50. And most of that, of those vehicles are, to Stefan's point, these single name trusts or funds. And if we took out all of those vehicles, the size of the space is of truly diversified indexes is around 3 billion by our numbers.
Wow.
It's incredibly small when you think about where, and then it's not that the benefits for diversification don't apply. They absolutely do. It's just, we're in the very early innings. So, you know, expect that number to go up.
But why do you think that is? Why do you think so many people still want to buy a Bitcoin tracker over actually owning the coin? It just, like, why would you want to give 2% away? It doesn't make sense.
I think it's really they want to have a bankable solution, and perhaps also they do not. And I mean, for me, when I started and started to invest directly, at least I'm already a bit older, but it's technically not easy for everyone. So I think that's why they are happy to pay up to 4% to own Bitcoin, which I think we all should work on. This is not the solution. It is easier, and there are solutions in many different ways to hold Bitcoin directly at a very much cheaper price. But then I think if you want to be invested, rather go for a diversified solution.
Interesting. And that actually, like, we're kind of coming towards the end of our time. So I'll ask you guys both one last question. And that is, when you're personally building a diversified portfolio, I assume none of us are 100% in a single coin. How do you consider your own portfolio? How do you build the diversity in your portfolio? Mike, go first.
Sure. I laugh because I am way more concentrated than I'd advise other people to be. And that's in large part because I work in the space. So, you know, our compensation is in the index governance token, for example. So my portfolio is mostly Ethereum, DPI, our flagship product, the index token, some investments to some other layer one blockchains. So, right. And so as time goes on, and as we've been talking throughout this conversation, you know, the ecosystem continues to evolve. There's going to be more and more stories that'll find their way into your portfolio. It's very much a narrative driven portfolio construction process, because in part because the data isn't there, in part because you should be viewing these as effectively long dated call options. But if any friend or family, you know, came to me, it's probably 60-40 between layer one blockchains and then some of these DeFi and metaverse allocations is probably what I would say. But I will throw in the last line of how much of that for your overall portfolio is, of course, dependent on your personal situation. And this is not financial advice. And
none of this is investment advice.
Exactly. And this is still a very risky space where you can lose a lot of your funds, particularly in that 40% portion of your crypto allocation that I'm referring to. What do you think, Stefan?
I very much agree. And I think what I would add is, what I love about this space is that as it is growing, you have Actually, and we don't talk about crypto as an asset class, but more as an asset or an asset universe. You can have so many different outcomes that you can build on in with crypto investment when it comes to yield, where you, if it's well done, you don't have market or volatility risk. You have other risks, but it's kind of a pure diversifier where you can generate yield. And you have a completely different risk profile than if you have a passive tracker of the DeFi sector, of the protocol layer, et cetera, et cetera. And then when it comes to active management, more hedge fund type of absolute return outcomes, venture capital. I think that's really the beauty, that you can actually build a proper portfolio only with crypto with very different outcomes. And then I think, as Mike stated, I think it's 85% of the overall crypto market is still layer one. So definitely that's the basis. And then I think you add, depending on your risk profile, on how, where you see the, and I love this term, kind of the long-term call option, where you see the opportunities, then you add DeFi, you add metaverse, wherever you feel comfortable and you think, hey, I want to participate there. And then, you build your portfolio along what your outcome should be after all. And then definitely the compliance disclaimer is depending on your situation.
Hey, we're talking about our own portfolio, so it's totally okay.
And it's actually, I even, that's more or less how I built my portfolio.
Yeah. Awesome. Both of you, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. For our listeners, if you have ideas for topics we can cover, please write in to podcast@signum.com. And until next time, then ciao.
Thank you.
Ciao. Thank you so much. Ciao.